Tuesday service, April, Yutres Nissan, second day, Cholomoy Pesach, Rabbi Akiva Tzatz, Pesach, leaving spiritual levels.
Moving from Pesach to the beginning of the Omer, this progression from Pesach through Shavuos is the root of a pattern that is found throughout all of Torah and all of life, and it could hardly be a more fundamental message. So let's try to define what that is. The root of this is found in the Kabbalah Sforim. I don't know if you're allowed to say Nadia and Kabbalah in the Torah way. But maybe the Kohet Pesach we could say it. The Arizal puts it like this, and all the Sforim say that when lights shine in the world, they always shine twice. Lights, the light of the Bria, the light that is all the gilui of all things in the world, the process, all process in the world, has two lights. Why we talk about light needs explanation, but that's what it is. And the lights that shine twice are first the first light, that's called the Orishon, and the first light is always perfect. It is very, very strong because it needs to open a space where there's no space before. But as soon as it's done that, this perfect, infinite and very powerful light, it goes away. It goes away to where it came from, and that's called the Or Sheni or the Or Chozeh. These have names, all of these things, but the light goes away and it leaves a longing, aching emptiness, a longing for the light that was there before. And that longing, that lack, that missing of the light brings the light back a second time. But the second time the light comes back, it's nothing compared to the first. Infinitesimally small, almost nothing. And that's called the Or Sheni. And that light, the second light, is the one that, although it is very small, it's the one that remains. So the pattern is that the first light is very powerful, perfect, nothing can go wrong with it. And then it goes. And because it goes, it leaves behind only the faintest of a residue. In the technical language, that's called the Rishimu. Something very, very fine and very, very, almost not there, but in just enough to keep the space open that was created. Then the second light comes in, into action between the second light and what's left of the first. A lot of technicalities, but that's the pattern. First light, perfect, does not last, cannot last, and then the second light comes in, which is very imperfect compared to the first one, but it's the light that remains. Now, I'm sure you all feel very enlightened about Pesach and about everything else in life. But the truth is, this idea does underlie everything that we will ever experience. Everything, every pasuk you ever learn, every event, everything that ever happens to you, every life ordeal and deliverance from that ordeal, we always will go through two phases. What does this mean? First of all, let's bring it down from Kabbalah to more perhaps philosophical or intellectual level before we see it in Pesach and through all of life. When things happen in the world, they always happen in potential. First, the possibility must be there. After the possibility is there, the thing happens. Nothing can happen unless it's possible. As Chazal would put it, everything must have a place. A thing cannot exist unless it has a space. An object can only be if there's a space. If the space is closed, the thing could not be. First, the thing exists in potential. The Ramban says in many, many ways, a thing must come out from its potential to yetzim and akayach el apoyel. It must come from the potential to the actual. The potential is always perfect. The potential is always perfect. The potential is always perfect. In fact, the potential is so perfect compared to what actually happens that very often in life it pays not to arrive. You know, the anticipation is very good, but when you get there, it's a big disappointment. The potential, the anticipation is always perfect. The potential, when you wake up in the morning, the potential for what you could do today is endless. What the day holds, many, many possibilities, endless possibilities. Possibilities. Can't do all of those. When you end up doing what you can do in the day, it's very limited, only what the day could hold. And usually imperfectly at that. So the world of potential is perfect and infinite and endless. Nothing can go wrong in the potential. The beauty of the potential, the bracha of the potential, is that it's endless and infinite. The curse of the potential, it's only potential. Nothing real yet. The beauty of what happens at the end of the process is that it happens. You have the reality. The curse of that is only this one. Only this one. If you have a sensitive ear, you have already realized that the bekoach is male and the bepoel is female. The male is always endless energy. The male, always perfect. Always multi-potential. When we refer to Hashem as male, we mean that he's in safe possibilities. And the world is always feminine. All the words for the earth are female. Eretz, Adoma, Avonim, the Kalim that make the world, all they're all feminine. The beauty of potential, the world of infinity, fantastic, but potential only. The curse of the world, the beauty of the world, you have it. The curse of the world, only this one. The word nekeva in Hebrew means to make specific. Nekeva, nakva alai schacha v'ten, fix your wages and I'll pay you. To have a wage, it has to be specified. The word nekeva means to fix, it means feminine, and the Maharal explains that's why it means a curse as well. Curse in the sense of being only what it is. It's fixed in what it is. The curse of the female, she has to limit things. The broch of the female, she brings birth to the world. Right? That's what it is. If someone says to you, imagine someone says to you, say any amount and I'll give you that much money. Any number, say a number. This is male. While this is happening, it's amazing, but you get nothing. When you say a number, two things happen. One, you get the money. Two, not a penny more. Nakva alai schacha, fix your wages, then I'll pay you. The potential is endless and perfect. The reality is very, very disappointingly small, completely fixed. I'll never forget the experience of as a medical student having to dissect a human embryo. And I'll never forget the amazing thing of seeing how the organs that form seed develop. You know that in Chazal call them the kidneys. Why? Because the kidneys are the origin. What happens is, in the little embryo within the mother's womb, a piece of the kidney breaks off and starts moving down during embryological development. And this piece of tissue that's derived from the kidney, in the male, becomes an organ that forms seed by the billion. By the billion. In the woman, it becomes an organ that forms seed, eggs, one at a time. You can count each one. And if she ovulates every month of her fertile life, she will use every one. You're talking about billions meeting one. That's male meeting female. Maharal says this is why a man can marry many women. Because a man is a multi-potential source. He's a creature of infinite possibilities. But a woman cannot marry... What woman in her right mind would want more than one husband? You know, wants more than much, much more than enough, you know. The point is that man, maleness, multi-potential, and that's why Zohar is Gematria Brocha as well. And many, many other connections to this as well. So, you have an endless potential which is infinite and perfect, but it gives way to a reality in the world. The Mekubalim say that the greatness of our world is that it's our world. The curse of our world, only this one. Only this one. So when the male is beginning the conception and there's a genetic specification, that's a perfect moment. But when the woman gives birth, all the other potentialities that it could have been are lost. And now you have a child, that's the bracha, but it's only this one. That is the pattern. Let's see this in Pesach and let's see if we can generalize this idea. Many people have said that this idea is the most important thing they ever heard. So it's worth paying attention. And I think you'll see why. Since this underlies all human experience, let's look at it at the national level, the experience of the Jewish people. And then we'll see if we can take it to a personal level as well. National level. How the Jewish people formed? By first light experience, which is an explosion of miracles. Explosion of miracles. The Nisim in Mitzrayim, they begin at the lowest possible point. Their result says the point of no return. Almost beyond hope. And then they are uplifted by an escalating series of Nisim, of miracles, which are indescribable. Right? You know that the Maharal and many others point out that the Nisim in Mitzrayim were a crescendo experience. Not simply a list of events, but an escalating, accelerating crescendo. Each Nis was higher, each Makkah in Mitzrayim was higher than the one before. The way the Maharal puts it in Nun Zayin, in Sefer HaGvuros, he says that each miracle, each Nis in Mitzrayim, reversed the order of creation. The Nisim in Mitzrayim proceeded in reverse order of the sayings of creation. The reason is that the way the creation proceeds, you begin with Bereshis, that's a dimensionless point of origin. Then you have Yehi Or, which is a revelation, a Gilui of what you have. And so you build 10 layers, which are known in Kabbalah as the spheres. You build 10 spheres, 10 layers, like the skins, like the layers of an onion. That's how you build reality. But the midstream had so contaminated reality, they had so made so toxic, they had so damaged all of reality, that 10 makkas were necessary, each one to knock out the tumor, each one to detoxify one level. Why were there 10 makkas in Mitzrayim? Because each of them came to purify one of the levels of tumor that the Mitzrayim... So what do you do when you build from the center, you have 10 layers, when you purify, the peel the layers from the outside till you get in. So the Makkos reverse the statements of creation. What's the first statement of creation? Bereishis, a pure beginning. What is the last of the Makkos? Makkos Bocheres, destruction of the wrong sort of beginning. The Medrash says that all Egyptian beginning was contaminated. All the firstborns were results of immoral relationships. Talk about extinguishing the wrong sort of beginning. What is the second statement of creation? Let there be light. Eor. What is the last of the second last of the plagues? Darkness, extinguishing the wrong. Yeah, the whole process. Look it up there. The moral takes you through the Hamsha. This is what you said at your Seder. This is what children are taught when they're 5 years old in Kama Shahu. If not, get your money back. But the point is that there's a reversal. And what we can extract from this principle is that when you reach that incredible midnight, when the firstborn are destroyed, you've reached back to the moment of creation. You're not just talking about, you've now reached the pinnacle. This is back to the moment of Bereishis. This is, of course, why there wasn't saying that God, the 10th Makkah, unlike all the others, was done by Hashem himself. Because now you've got back to the moment where there's only, I'm sure your minds are racing ahead and you've already been through all the 10s in Torah and you've seen the same thing. The Seres HaDibris. The first is Anochi, simply a statement of Hashem's being before you even emanate into you shall or you shall not. And what is the 10th of Avraham Avinu's ordeals? Having to shecht his firstborn. Again, we come to a firstborn, very clear this pattern in Torah. But the point is that when you reach that incredible midnight and the firstborn are destroyed, you reach back to the explosive energy, the millions of volts of the moment of creation. And it gets better 7 days later when the sea splits. There Chazal said that the lowliest of the Jews experienced more than the highest prophet ever saw subsequently. And then comes the surprise. At that moment of greatness, the next step is being dropped in the desert. Desert always means in Torah a place of death forces, place where there's no life, and walking through the desert, through the dangerous zone of walking through the desert, that is a complete contradiction to what happened before. Stage one, tremendous, artificial, free, miraculous uplift. Step two, pain, difficulty, walking through the desert and doing it yourself. And that's the pattern of life. First, the first light. The first light is perfect. It's all potentialities. It opens the envelope of all that is possible. And it's always perfect. But it never lasts. The point of life is learning to do it yourself. And therefore Hashem does it first. He detoxifies all of evil. He breaks down, he destroys all the levels of evil in Mitzrayim. And then he says to the Jewish people, you get the message? Now you do it. And he drops them in the desert. And as it happens over the next 38 years in the desert, we were challenged with 10 ordeals and failed all of them. Our challenge was to work through all the layers of evil, all the layers of Ra and Tumah, and destroy all of them and reach Eretz Israel, and we failed all of them. The pattern is, first it's done for you. And then when you get the message, and where does that happen? Just when you think it'll last forever is when it's taken away from you. But that's when you learn to do it. And that's what it is. What is Pesach? Pesach means to leap over. The Mekubalim say on the first night of Pesach, you leap to the 50th level without having to traverse any intermediaries. Pesach, you leap to the 50th level. And then you count Sphira. Then you start counting, making each step count. You can't miss one step. You miss one step on a journey, you don't reach the destination. The Baal HaMus say on the first night of Pesach, you can have whatever you want. Whatever you want, you just have to want. First night, complete shimurim, complete protection. There's no possibility of danger. Whatever you want, you can have. Whatever you want to be, you can be that. And then you have to pay. This is called fly now, pay later. That's the pattern. First night of Pesach, you leap to that level that's given for free. You get the message, you feel the exhilaration, then it's taken away from you. Then you walk through the desert of life's experience, making it real. One painful step after another, no leaping of any levels. Each piece has to be put in to be make a kinyan on that which was first given in inspiration. That's the pattern. What's the month of Pesach? Nisan is Nisim. It's Gematria Nisim. Nisim. Nisim is what Hashem does. Beautiful, wonderful, amazing month. Then comes Iyar. Iyar is very difficult. Nisan, the zodiac, the mazal of Nisan is the sheep. The sheep just follows. It has no strength of its own. It passively follows. Lechtech acharai b'midbar. And then you have Iyar, which is the bull. That's a complete opposite character. The Chazal say that Pesach is the right leg, and Iyar, Nisan, Iyar is the left leg. Chesed, then comes Din. So first you have the right side, the sheep. It follows passively. This is all the imagery of the sheep in Mitzrayim. And then you move into the desert, which is the eagle, the ox, the bull. And that's where it gets difficult. And only when those two have been done, you've been inspired artificially, and then you've learned to do it yourself, then you can reach Sivan, which is Ta'im, perfect harmony between the two. The two Luchos, Moshe and Aaron, Asan Hashem, Ksav, Tarshav, Alper, all the harmonies coming together. The pattern of life, the thing never to forget, is first there's an artificial inspiration. First it's done for you, Hashem does it. And when you think it will last forever, he pulls the rug from under your feet. Now you do it. Then you walk through the desert. Then you can meet me at Sinai as an equal. Once you've been inspired by me and I've shown you how it's done, And then you do it yourself, then you become real, then we can have a real relationship. A real relationship consists between two people who have each have their own content. Not when the giver's done it all. And for that, the giver has to step back. And when the father teaches his child to walk, he picks up a little baby by the hands. The child's standing on his feet for the first time. Exhilarating moment. And in that moment of thrill, he takes his first step. And it's the most wonderful moment. He's taken his first step, and he can't fall. His father's holding his hands. And in that moment of excitement, the father lets go. Then Abba lets go. Then the child stands there frightened and alone and abandoned by the one who put him in that situation. But that's when he learns to walk. And only after he takes that first frightened step on his own can he rush into his father's arms and realize that when his father let go, he was showing him a greater love than when he held his hands. That's the pattern. It's dangerous, but it has to be done that way. The mother teaches a child to cross the street. She does it many times holding his hands. Fine, it's all fine. One day she has to step back and let him do it himself. If it works fine, then it's great. If it doesn't, it's an unmitigated tragedy. But there comes a time when you have to do it yourself. And therefore, Pesach is the time of inspiration. It's the time of the first light. It's all done for free. It's all miraculous. Then it gets taken away. And then you walk through the desert counting every painful step. Not a stone unturned. Every piece of work has to be done. And then you can reach the Sinai experience, which is that he should kiss us with the kisses of his mouth as two people who have a relationship of equals. Let's see if we can generalize this. If it's the pattern of the birth of the Jewish people, it must be the pattern everywhere. How's a human being formed? Let's take the individual. Also two phases. The child in the womb, the Gemara says in Nidda, Chavtes, Lamed, somewhere around there, Lamed Aleph, the Gemara says that the child is taught the whole Torah in the womb. Little fetus, little child in the mother's womb, he's taught the whole Torah. He has a light lit above his head, he sees from one end of the world to the other, he knows the whole Torah, he knows his whole future. Absolute mi yit neni ki yarche ikedem. Who could give me like those months when I lived in my mother's ki meol akai yishmereni? Unbelievable experience. And as he's about to be born, he gets a cruel blow. The malach gives him a blow, and he forgets everything that he learnt, and he's born as a simple child. Why would Hashem do that? Why would Hashem get a malach to teach a child the whole Torah only to make him forget it when he's really going to need it? The answer is there's phase one and phase two. Phase one is it's all given for free. You know everything you ever need to know. And then it's beaten out of you. Now you do it yourself. And the rest of life is spent making a kinyan, fighting back for that original ancient wisdom that was once automatically yours. This is the reason, by the way, that when you hear something spiritually true, you don't have a response of learning, you have a response of recognition. Say, I know that's right. How do you know it? Because it's a good teacher, by the way. A good teacher brings out innate wisdom. A good teacher draws it out. When the Talmidim ask Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai a question, he says to him, what do you think? I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to show you how to work it out for yourself. The Gemara doesn't give you answers. It teaches you how to think. A good teacher, the English word education, is one of the remarkable few English words that are correct. Education means to bring out. Educare in Latin means to draw out. Indoctrinate is to stuff information in. That's not a good teacher. A good teacher leads out the information, draws it out, stimulates the student to work it out. A good Gemara teacher never says the pshat in English. A good Gemara teacher makes it difficult. The Talmud has to sweat blood. If you go to a Gemara Shiur and you don't walk out with a headache, you've failed. A good teacher shows the Talmud how to do it, brings out the information. By the way, this is the nature of a chiddush. Let's say you're learning and you come up with a chiddush. You say something original. And if you do it often, you can write a whole sefer of your chiddush. What a chutzpah, how can you do that? Torah comes from another world. No, the answer is a chiddush is simply dipping a bucket into the deep well of the original Torah. A chiddush is inner Torah that is coming out in resonance with an experience that is awakening that inner wisdom. Everything you ever need to know is deep within. And it's there because the feeder, because the baby was taught the whole Torah. And after he's born, it's taken away, but it leaves an impression, the reshimu, it leaves that residue of wisdom, an intimation of infinite wisdom. And it's just out of reach, and you know it's there. And when you feel it, you know it, and it resonates, and your own Torah is unique to you, because it's a resonance with your own original Torah. That's how the fetus learns. By the way, the Gaon says something amazing. The Gaon says, if this doesn't move you, there's no hope for you. The Gaon says that the Chazal say that when a person dies, three malachim come to greet you. Three angels come to greet you. One comes to add up all your mitzvahs, one comes up to add up all your averas, and one comes to see, heichan teirosu yiv'im yishleme b'yodai. Where's your Torah? If you're a man, it's your learning. If you're a woman, it's your Torah's chesed. By the way, for homework, you can think about why you need three malachim. Debits and credits says it all. Why do you need a third one? It's a question for another time. But there's a third malach. He comes to see what you have achieved in total. The Gaon says, as that third angel approaches you, as you move down the passage from this world to the next, you recognize his face. It turns out to be the one who learned Torah with you before you were born. And now at the end of your lifetime has come to see, did you do it? That amazing chavrusa that we had where I gave it all to you. You had everything you ever needed to know. And that I sent you out into the world to make it yours. And to acquire it, to make it real. Did you do that? That's always the pattern. First Hashem meets us in Mitzrayim. It's an unbelievable experience of millions of volts. And then he steps back and he says, now you walk through the desert, I'll meet you at Sana. And then you have a relationship of intimacy, which is a real one. This pattern you see everywhere. You don't only have to take life from before birth to afterwards. You can take it from birth on. It also has two phases, childhood and adulthood. Childhood is a time of unreal inspiration. Children have no sense of limitation. A child, a young teenager, they think that, ask a normal five-year-old what he's going to do when he grows up. He'll tell you the most impossible commissariat problem. Scratch beneath the surface in any 18-year-old male, and you'll find he's totally convinced he's going to be the world's greatest everything, there's no question. He's going to be the world champion everything. It's all there. He's going to do it. What happens when he's 28 and 38 and 48 and 58? And he's not the world's greatest anything. Some become morbidly depressed. It's a common male phenomenon. But most keep right on fantasizing. They are the world's greatest. They haven't had time to do it yet, but you know, they'll get there. Women don't have that problem. It's not a woman's problem. It's a man's problem of infinite potential. I hate to say this, but men therefore tend to childishness. Because childhood and childishness is the phase of infinite potential. Amazing, nothing been done yet, but amazing potential. Children don't understand. A child cannot understand that in order to have what you must have, you have to sacrifice the rest. He thinks he can have it all. You see a child standing outside a delicatessen with £1 in his grubby little hand, and 25 different cookies and buns in the window. It was an amazing child. Stands there drooling. Finally makes his choice, is about to hand over his money and get his cookie. All 24 others start to glow brightly. You know, if you want to torture a child, which is not really a Jewish activity, then what you do is you give him an ice cream. When he's holding the ice cream, you give him a second ice cream. When the child's firmly grasping both ice creams, you offer him a third. You'll end up with a pool of ice cream and tears. Because a child cannot understand that in order to have what you can have, you have to sacrifice the rest. Right? This is why young men often hesitate to get married. Why doesn't he want to get married? Because he looks out at the world of women and they're amazing. I mean, each one's more beautiful than the next. There's millions of them. Millions. But if he gets married, he's going to have only one. So he'd rather have none. A child would rather live in the fantasy of all potential than close it down and make it real, because there's a sense of limitation. That's what it is. And therefore, childhood is a time of endless energy, tremendous potential. As children start to see the potential closing, you see it. I was walking to shul with my little son when he was 6. And for 2 or 3 minutes, he falls silent, which usually means you have to take his temperature. And then he looks at me with real concern, and he says to me, you know, Abba, I'm not sure if I'm going to marry Debbie or Frida. I said, what's the problem? He said, because I just realized whichever one I marry, the other one's going to be so upset. We get to shul, we walk up the steps, he stops cold on the top step, and he looks at me with real concern, and he says, Abba, I just realized whoever I marry, all the others are going to be so upset. Oh, so he's a confident young man, he said. But for the first time in his young life, he starts to realize you can't do it all. The potential is endless, but the reality has to be finite. And that's childhood and adulthood. By the way, it's an amazing thing. Do you know that in all cultures on earth, youth is described as springtime and summer, and old age as winter. Do you know why? Because spring and summer is tremendous potential energy. And old age, where things are frozen, there's no potential left, what can an old person do? He can just turn his chair a little closer to the sun. But in Judaism, it's exactly the opposite. We describe youth as winter, and old age as summer. Shlomo Melech talks about Yemei Chorfi, the days of my winter, the days of my youth. Because that's when you break the frozen ground and put the seeds in. And in summer, you reap the crop. Right? In some cultures, in Holland, for example, one of the leading causes of death among the elderly is they have themselves killed. Euthanasia, nothing else to live for. In Judaism, when a person becomes very old and there's no more potential, he's spent all the currency, but he's bought the goods. But you've done it. You've acquired it. You have it with you. What a radically different view of life. Sure, the birth of a child is explosive joy because of the potential, but it's anxious. The child hasn't done anything yet. And sure, old age is sad because the potential's gone, but if it's been spent wisely, the currency's been spent, but the goods have been bought. Completely different vision of life. And therefore, you are sacrificing, exchanging the potential for the actual. The one is illusory and childish, although it's infinite. And the second is finite and limited, but it's real. And that is the pattern of all life experience. You know, I happen to work in the fields, the so-called Baal Tshuva field, people who were brought up, not brought up religious, they were just brought up normal. And people who People who come in, they get inspired. First, amazing experience, blown away. They hear a teacher, they hear a rabbi teaching, they learn Torah. It's an unbelievable, breathtaking experience. But sooner or later, it becomes hard work. But that's when they get real. I'll never forget the experience of a young man standing at a chuppah in Yerushalayim many, many decades ago. He was standing at the chuppah, and next to him was the Rosh Yeshiva, a well-known Rosh Kollel, head of one of the big Kollel, one of the big yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, whom himself, I happen to know, was a Baal Shiva 40 years ago. He used to hang out on the beaches of a certain city. Today is a big Rosh Yeshiva. And he said to the young fellow, how's it going in yeshiva? This young Baal Shiva said, you know, Rabbi, so-and-so. He said, you know, when I began, it was amazing. Every line of Gemara I learned was unbelievable. And now I'm sitting in yeshiva day after day, and I'm sweating blood. It's very hard. The Rosh Yeshiva smiled and said, I see you're in phase two. That's the way it goes. Phase one cannot last forever. And this applies to everything. Let's take one more example. I mean, once you start to think through this, you'll see it applies everywhere. Let's take one more example. One of the most important. Marriage. Marriage has two phases. Phase one is unreal thrill. In the English world, they call that romance. Rav Dessler used to point out, there's not even a word for that in Moshe Kodesh. Rav Dessler had a famous principle, if the Torah doesn't have a word for a thing, the thing doesn't exist. We have a word for love, that's called Ahava, based on Hav, which means to give. As Rav Dessler so classically explains, love is built where you give. When there's been time to give of yourself, you love. That's why parents always love their children more than the children love the parents. Parents always love their children more than the children love the parents. The giving goes in that direction. You give of yourself genuinely, invest in someone else, then there's love. The Mekubalim say you can only love yourself. You can only love yourself. The only hope you ever have of loving someone else is when you can expand your definition of self to include them. When you can invest yourself in them so intensely that there's an identity between you and them. And of course you love them, it's you. But it has to be a giving. And what is romance? What is romance to be not? The romance, love at first sight, is the romantic notion. A person, so what is it? What is romance? You're sitting in a room, this person walks in. Suddenly things go pink. Music starts playing one direction, bells start ringing someplace else, you get this tight chest and so on. What is that kind of thing? After you get married, you know, about 2.5 hours after you get married, you know, that's gone. Because it's an artificial first phase experience. Young man says to me, Rabbi, knuckles are white on the table. I married the wrong girl. I said to him, how long have you been married? 2.5 months. I said, why is she the wrong girl? He said, you know, when I used to be with her in the beginning, I used to look at her, I couldn't breathe. I used to look at her, I could not breathe. Now, 2.5 months later, breathing fine. I had to explain to this young fellow that if 2.5 months after marriage you're having trouble breathing, you've got asthma, you know. It's got nothing to do with that. And that is the problem. The problem is that it's at first, how long does the romance last? Long enough to convince you it'll last forever. Then Hashem pulls it away. So now you do it. And that's when many relationships collapse, because the young people haven't been taught this. Our world paints a picture of romance and labels it love. That's a tragedy. That's a tragedy, because our young people are not taught that there's a phase two that you have to work for. 35 years of giving to somebody, you can talk about love. You can't talk about that in the beginning. The first phase called romance is there as an explosion of potential. It's millions of volts, but it's unreal. But it's there to get you in. It's an uplift, exodus from Egypt experience. But you're going to sooner or later walk through the desert. The Rambam says that life is like standing on a dark plain on a stormy night. You stand there beaten by the wind, lashed by the rain, hopelessly lost. And at the moment of greatest despair, there's suddenly a flash of lightning. And in that instant, you see the road clearer than by day. And as you see it, the light disappears. And the rest of the night is walking through the storm on memory alone of a flash of light that you once saw. I'm upset. Some people see more flashes, some people see less, but no one walks in the light. That's the way it goes. And that's the thing. Kids these days, the children are brought up these days in a phase one generation, a quick fix. It has to be done immediately. Children have computers today. Computers do 10 billion functions in the first 2 microseconds when you switch them off. They only do 5 billion, they're called slow. If you buy your child a computer, they're doomed. Doomed. If your child has a computer, you must make them plant a garden. Chazal say you learn emunah from planting things. Ne'emonos. Tending a seed day after day, week after week, season after season. They'll learn something about life. But if they have to, everything's going to happen immediately and instantaneously, they'll learn nothing. It's a quick fix generation. When I was a teenager, not that long ago, if I made my mother a cup of tea, used to pour boiling water into a teapot to warm it, then pour it out, then pour in fresh boiling water. Then you put in leaves, then you covered it with something to keep warm while it was drawing, then you put fresh water in the teacup, then you pour it out, then you put it straight. It took a long time. Today the fellow's dipping a tea bag. That's taken. Now it's got to be freeze-dried, and tomorrow it will be intravenous, you know. Because because that is the problem. And therefore, there's phase one, which is artificial but necessary. But then you eventually have to walk through the desert, what Chazal called the Midbar HaOmim in Jewish history. Let's finish with one more version of this. But again, you see it everywhere. We don't have time now to see it in more versions. But let's just take one more. Jewish history. Jewish history has two phases. You have the Bria, 6 days, and then you move through 6,000 years of history. And we are here. We are 5775 now. Very, very late. The Ramban says this is the 6 days of creation. We are now late Erev Shabbos. You can smell the challan cooking. It's time to put on your Shabbos cloth. We see that with hindsight all the Nevuahs having come true except the final pre-Messianic ones. But if you go back from where we are, 2,350 years, you get to the junction between phase one and phase two. Phase one is called Gilui Ponim. Hashem was revealing himself openly in the world. There were Nisim, there was Nevuah, he was speaking to people. The world was incandescent. There was no such thing as atheism. There were no atheists then. There was Avodah Zarah, which is dealing with intermediates, giving too much condition to things. But that was the first phase. And then that went silent. Phase two, we have seen nothing. In phase two, we have no revealed miracles, no Nisim Niglim. We have no Nevuah. This is the phase of darkness. This is called Hester Ponim. When does it happen? Between Purim and Hanukkah. In Kabbalah, Purim is called the right leg, and Hanukkah is called the left leg. We move outside the body. Lebar migufa, we're outside the body now. We move into the legs that carry us forward in history. I think we spoke about this once before. So you have, first of all, Purim, where the light begins to fade. Yes, there's a Megillah, but it does not mention Hashem's name. Yes, it talks about a nace, but the nace is hidden. There's no ocean splitting, no river splitting, no dead people being revived. There's a king who doesn't like Jews. That's perfectly natural. He has a prime minister who wants to kill them all. That's perfectly natural. Happens all the time. Perfectly natural story. And somehow, Torah is reaccepted in a way that is partly revealed and partly hidden. Esther means the hidden one. Then you get Hanukkah where there's nothing. There's not a Megillah. There's not even a Mishnah. Nothing. There's a nace that happened after the end of the war. A candle burned for 8 days. A light burned. Only the Kohanim saw it. It had nothing to do with saving the Jewish people. It's the last wave goodbye from the world of Nisim. And we are deep into thousands of years of phase two. We are walking through the desert of life's experience with nothing but the memory of a flash of light that we once saw. Torah Shebiksav. We know Torah Shebalpeh. Torah Shebalpeh, you have to do yourself. Torah Shebiksav, amazing. Unbelievable. Indescribably great. Torah Shebalpeh, you have to do it yourself. You have to make it up yourself. You have to say the pshat. You have to figure it out. The greatness of our experience where we are in history, the lowliness, of course, is that we see nothing. See nothing. Nothing of it. But the greatness of where we are is that this time we're doing it ourselves. And that is the pattern of two phases. Pesach, first Kabbalah Satara, Pesach the Shavuos, automatically amazing, infinite, perfect. But the real Kabbalah Satara is Purim. But it's done in the darkness where we learn to see ourselves. And therefore the transition from Torah Shebiksav, which is hearing another voice from another world, to Torah Shebaal Peh, where you have to do it yourself and figure it out in the darkness and walk through the desert through that night on the memory of a flash of light, that is where we are.
I'd like to speak about is Tefillin B'Chol HaMoed. Not planning on coming out with any Goyis Chedushim. So I'm going to be Mazbe with the Gemaras. We should just speak about wearing Tefillin on Yom Tov B'Chol HaMoed and then get on to Funu Kudus within the Inyan, which I'd like to be Mazbe. So we start with the Gemara Moed Cotton. Daf Yud Ches, the Mishnah there says, "In case Tefillin B'Chol HaMoed, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, later the Mishnah says, Kosev all in Tfilin Mezuzah La'atzmai, he can write for himself, but he wouldn't be able to write for someone else. He can only write for himself. Says the Gemara, Kosev all in Tfilin Mezuzah La'atzmai, V'lacherim L'toiva. La'atzmai means for yourself, but for someone else you'd also be able to write L'toiva, you wouldn't be able to get S'cha, you wouldn't be able to make out a job out of writing Tfilin, but La'atzmai, or V'lacherim as a toiva, you would be able to write. Comes along with Yossi to say, Kosev, if someone needs panos, we'll see exactly what this means later. Someone needs panos, he needs something to eat, either he doesn't have what to eat, or he wants more, he needs more to eat, he'd be able to sell and write to other people. As kedalkei, the regular way he sells, kedei panasosei. So it would seem, you would think that from this Mishnah, you would be able to wear tefillin l'chalamayit. Comes along to straight away and says, ain't right, mekan shemutah lo neach tefillin. There's no right, it's mutah to wear tefillin l'chalamayit. Because maybe this Gemara, the Tanoim and this Gemara are going like the Gemara in Eruvin. The Gemara in Eruvin, which discusses where the Shabbos is Zman Tefillin and not Zman Tefillin. The Gemara there is the Mishnah, there is the Machlokes, Tanakamim, and Gamliel. In the Mishnah, if you find Tefillin on Shabbos, what you should do. So the Tanakamim says you should wear one pair at a time and bring them back to the house. And Gamliel says you can wear two pairs at a time. So the Gemara says maybe the Machlokes between Tanakamim and Gamliel is whether Shabbos is a man tefillin or not. If we say Shabbos is a man tefillin, then there's going to be a problem of Baal Tosef, and therefore we're able to put one pair on at a time. If Shabbos loves a man tefillin, there's not going to be a problem with Tosef, and therefore you can put Baal Tosef, and therefore you can put two pairs on at a time. So in the same way, the Gemara over there, we see there's a man Omar that holds Shabbos is a man tefillin, and it will be a problem of wearing two pairs of tefillin on Shabbos because it's Baal Tosef. So to maybe the Tanoim and Moed Katan is also going Lefi, that Gemara, the free that man over there, the Shabbos is a man tefillin, and therefore Chol HaMoed is also put on tefillin, which we don't paskin like, and we paskin Shabbos loves man tefillin, therefore this Gemara in Moed Katan be Shlei Kalach. The guy will be wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed. The Tosis brings, Tosis quotes to you, Yerushalmi Moed Katan, which brings a story of there's Chabba Anash, this person who he lost his tefillin. He went to Chananel and asked him, who was a soif, and asked him for a pair of tefillin. They send the shayla to Abu Anas and Abu Rachona. They send the shayla on and ask, what should we do? So he said, do a shtickle. He said to Chananel, the sofer, you give me your own tefillin. And after you've given your own tefillin, then you need a pair of tefillin, so you'd be able to write for yourself. So Taisa says, l'chor, if this Gemara, it would be clear that we do wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed. There is a chiv to wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed. But straight away, Taisa brings down. Sorry. The halachas gedolah is the paskin that's also to wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed, and Tosis goes into explaining that the reason why we wouldn't wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed is because of ois, and the ois is, he says the ois is part of melacha, that in the same way that we don't do melacha l'chol HaMoed, we shouldn't be there's an ois on l'chol HaMoed, and therefore we won't wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed either, which we'll go into later what the reason is behind it. There's an ois of l'chol HaMoed, the ois of yontov, it should be a reason to stop us wearing tefillin. So the violin we've got the Yerushalmi, which sounds like that you should wear tefillin from the story, it would sound like that you should wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed, which the Beis Yosef comes up and he says that it's not so muchach from the Yerushalmi, because the Yerushalmi asked their Rav about Rav and the Mishnah, and Rav comes along and says, no, Mishnah talk about l'chol niach. So Tosis understood l'chol niach means that if someone needs to wear tefillin l'chol HaMoed, you would be able to write. If someone comes to a sofer and says to him, oh, Chol HaMoed, I need a pair, Rav would pass good L'Honiach, that if he needs to wear a pair of tefillin, if he asks you after Yontov, you wouldn't be able to write. But L'Honiach, to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, you would be able to write. To which the Beis Yosef says that Tosis teaches L'Honiach is to wear tefillin. He teaches L'Honiach different. He teaches L'Honiach means if he needs a pair of tefillin to L'Honiach to leave and to be sold after Yontov. But if he taki needs a pair of tefillin, there's no such thing as needing a pair of tefillin on Yom Tov, because Chol HaMoed loved one tefillin. And when Rav says L'Honiach, it means if the sofer wants to take a pair of tefillin and leave them to be sold after Yom Tov, he still wants to catch up his work, he wants to write a bunch of pairs of tefillin to be able to sell them after Yom Tov, he wouldn't be able to do. But if and there wouldn't be such a thing as L'Honiach to wear on Chol HaMoed. So basically also tight up the one you showed me there, that L'Honiach means to wear, L'Honiach means to leave after Chol HaMoed, which you can't do. If someone comes to you on Chol HaMoed and asks you to write a pair of tefillin because he will need them after Chol HaMoed, then you will be able to. Let's just be mad at that point again, don't think I said so clearly. The Beis Yosef explains that to Yerushalmi that if someone comes along and says, I need a pair of tefillin, I need a pair of tefillin for straight after Chol HaMoed, then you would be able to write a pair of tefillin for him, write it, and the Chol HaMoed is not going to be wearing it on Chol HaMoed, but you'd be able to write it. The Mishnah, which is in Kosvin, is talking about a case of L'Honiach, to be left, as in the Sofer wants to leave it, he'll put it away, and he'll say, when customers are going to come to me after going to look for the tefillin, I'll have some tefillin ready for them, I've got some extra time now, which you won't be able to do. But in Chol HaMoed, it's not muchach from the Shalmi that you wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. That's the Gemaros. Coming on to the Rishonim, again, it's not clear from the Rishonim whether we wear or don't wear on Chol HaMoed. It's only with Dukim in the Rishonim, because they only talk about ksivas tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So the Beis Yosef has he's medayik the Rishonim whether to which shita they hold. So the Beis Yosef, he speaks out the Rashi and the Rosh against the Rambam. Rashi and the Rosh, when they touch up the Mishnah, they say k'dei panasosoi. If someone he's able to write tefillin k'dei panasosoi for his panasa, they touch it up to mean berevach. He needs panasa because he has what to eat, but he needs extra simchas yomtov if he wants to be marbe besuda. Therefore, he can write tefillin for extra. Rambam uses the lashon ilay mar yoichal. He doesn't have anything to eat. If someone doesn't have anything to eat, he can write tefillin Chol HaMoed and sell them. So the Beis Yosef explains as well. He says the fee Rashi in the Rosh that says someone could write tefillin Chol HaMoed if he just needs extra food. Why? Because they hold that we do write tefillin Chol HaMoed, and therefore even though it's to do stam melacha to build a house, I can only do it if I don't have anything to eat. I need panos, I don't have anything to eat on Chol HaMoed. But when it comes to tefillin, we write tefillin Chol HaMoed. Therefore, there's already more of a heter to write tefillin, and therefore you can even write if you just need extra food. But the Rambam, he holds that writing tefillin Chol HaMoed has got the same din. But writing tefillin on Chol HaMoed has got the same din as building a house. In the same way, you aren't allowed to build a house on Chol HaMoed. If you need food, you would be able to build a house. So to with tefillin, there's no reason to wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. If you need something to eat, you would be. So the Beis Yosef is medayik and showing them to say that it could be a machlekes Rashi and Rosh against the Rambam. There's another Rashi which a lot of people are doing. A lot of people ask me how to be quoting this Rashi in Sukkah. Rashi and Sukkah is talking about the Torah Bonhoi in the front of Mitzvah Haba. If someone's got Mitzvah Haba, the Gemara discusses whether you should be saying Mitzvah Haba, whether you should be saying a bracha of Asher Kitchon Mitzvah Tzon Ala Mitzvahs, say one bracha of all of them, or Rabbi Yudashet and Mishnaka Paskin, like the Mavorach Al Kol Achas Achas. It says Rashi, what are these examples of Mitzvah Haba? Losh Rashi is little lulav, Leishiva Sukkah. Loniach Tfilin is Ativ Tzitzis. Rashi says four Mitzvahs. If you have little lulav, Leishiva Sukkah. And Loniach Tfilin is Ativ Tzitzis. So some people want to say this Rashi shows us quite clearly. Come Sukkos when you're at the same time you're Leishiva Sukkah and you're little lulav, you're Loniach Tfilin. But I don't know why we can't just say Rashi's talking about two different cases. Little lulav, Leishiva Sukkah. On Sukkah you can have two Mitzvahs. You can have Mitzvah lulav and Mitzvah Sukkah. And a regular day of the week, Loniach Tfilin is Ativ Tzitzis. You have Talis and Tfilin to put on. And you want to know whether you should make two brachos or one brach. So I don't know that Rashi should give a daik or not. Coming on to the poskim, we have Hilchus Tefillin, it's not in Hilchus Chol HaMoed, it's in Hilchus Tefillin, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, the Chol HaMoed Gamkein Oslo Niach Tefillin, Me'atam Hazeh, Me'atzvei, Shmei Chol HaMoed Gamkein Ois, there and Ois. Comes on the Ramon and Nagon and says, "V'yesh oivim shechol hamoed chay betfilin." Some people say chol hamoed is like a chay betfilin. V'chein noigim b'chol gvias elu lohanichem b'moed or levoich aleha. We should make a bracha there. Elash im levoich aleha b'koylom. You should make a bracha b'koylom. You should make a bracha quietly. V'beisvelish kavoy shayim meis hashama. Let's see. Let's go through this again and just be masbir. So, when he said that you shouldn't make a bracha b'koylom, the Taz asks, "Hakadosh Baruch Hu." He knows what you're doing. He knows you're doing the Shem Shmaya. What's the difference to make if you say bracha out loud or not make say bracha? But the behater seems to be fine with it. He says it's not so shmaya. The reason why you're doing it, you shouldn't make a bracha b'koylom is to stay away from achrei, because people start saying bracha, so other people will get annoyed. So you shouldn't say a bracha b'koylom. I'm not going to discuss the moment. I'm not going to discuss whether you're saying a bracha or not. If I leave it with the Ramah, which says that you should say a bracha quietly. The Beis Yosef points out that this is in Simon Chofei and Shulchan Aruch, that even though you're not making a bracha on tefillin, for those who don't make brachas on tefillin, even though you're not making a bracha on tefillin, it would still be also to speak between tefillin Shel Rosh and tefillin Shel Yad. He said that to be answered to Amein or Kaddish, you would be able to, because there's only an issa to answer between Amein and Kaddish when it's when you're making a bracha, avoid the bracha of the first bracha is going on to finish Rosh as well. That's when it's also to answer the main Kaddish. But when you're not making a bracha on Chol HaMoed, if you're still making a bracha, it would be mutar, you'd be chayav to answer the main Kaddish. The Taz points out that for those people who do it for the Chol HaMoed, they'd have to take them off before Halal, because Halal is coming out to the Chiv Yom Tov, and Bistir says it's different to Rishchoydish is the Kesse in Musaf, that's why they take it off just before Musaf. But people that wear Tefillin Chol HaMoed, then they should take them off before Halal, and he said, Avad and Avad for Kriyas Torah. I saw brought down from Yishuv Yaakov and the Kaf Chaim that the first day Chol HaMoed is, people are knowing, they keep the Tefillin, the first day Chol HaMoed Pesach. They keep the tefillin because they're laying to do with tefillin, and we don't want to take off the tefillin before Kriyas Torah. That's the Mechaber and the Gaon also asking them that we don't wear tefillin, and the more that we do wear tefillin. Coming on to the two is in two places. In one place he says Maniach Umavoich, like his father did. That's in Siman Tovkof Memhei Legabe Chol HaMoed. In Siman Lamed he says Maniach Bli Bocho, even though his father made the Bocho. I'm not sure the steer between the two places, but he holds Maniach, and the base also there brings down. He brings down the Rosh that Maniach Bli Bocho, he brings down the Motcha that Maniach, he brings down the Smak that you Maniach Bli Bocho, he brings down the Maram that you Maniach with Bocho. He's 4 or 5 Rishonim that you are Mavoich. And then he brings the Rosh from the Ravid that learn Sheimer, that Eid Sheim Maniach, we don't wait for the Chol HaMoed. He said, V'chein Noigen, that's how we should be Noig, not to wait for the Chol HaMoed, even though he's brought down all the other Rishonim and Achonim. We do wear tefillin l'chol hamoed. He's quite happy to go along with the Rashba and the Ravid, not to wear. He explains out that Amol, everyone used to wear tefillin, and then they found the Medrash Nelam, which had been lost in Shir HaShirim, in the Zoya, that he has a whole long arichas there about not wearing tefillin l'chol hamoed, and he says, and from then on, the Sfardim stopped wearing, the Ashkenazim carried on wearing, and that's when it came on to, we're not sure yes to wear, not to wear. He said that's why they all said to wear, but once this had been discovered and people found out about Medrash Nelam, they stopped wearing. So this is just, so far we've seen the Gemaras, not Muchach either way. The Rishonim could be the Rashi and the Rosh hold that we could be the Rashi and the Rosh hold that we do wear, and the Rambam holds that we don't wear. Could be the Rashi and Sukkah, which isn't so Meduik, I'm not sure. We've seen the Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber, the Gaon hold that we do wear, that we don't wear, and the Rumor holds that we do wear, and the Beis Yosef, who brings down a lot of the Rishonim and say that we do wear, becomes the Maskonon to say we don't wear. So it's clear, it's a big machlokes, poskim, zicha. So let's go on to a few potim within the machlokes and see. I want to be masbir a few potim within the machlokes to try and see. I'm not going to come out with a conclusion yes to wear, not to wear, it's time, but just to see within the Machlokes, how we should do Ashkenazim Halacha L'Maaseh. So the first Nakuda, which didn't stay at first, is the Nakuda of Ois. The Lashon of the Mishnah of the Shulchan Aruch is B'chol HaMoed Oslan Yach Tefillin Me'atam Hazeh Ba'atmo Yishimeich Chol HaMoed Gam Heim Ois. What is this Ois? So the Taz on the spot says the Ois is because on Pesach, on Chol HaMoed, the Ois on Pesach is we eating Matzah. And on Sukkos, we have the mitzvah of Yeshivas for Sukkah. We have an ois of Yom Tov. Tosus brought that it's a melacha. The Radvaz says that it's going to be toilah because if it's melacha, it's going to be toilah. What you hold about melacha? The Fila Shittus that melacha is also minoraisa Chol HaMoed. Then we taka would wear tefillin. We would not wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed because we've got something with melacha's device. We've got something to show us in the day, it's got Kedusha, and therefore we shouldn't wear. But the Fila Shittus that Melacha on Yom Tov is only Drabonon, therefore, the Fila Shittus of Melacha Drabonon is only Drabonon on Chol HaMoed, therefore the day has got less Kedusha, and therefore there would be a reason to wear tefillin. It would just come out from there, just Agav, it would come out straight on the Rambam, because the Rambam taka holds that Melacha is Osim Drabonon. So if Melacha is only Osim Drabonon, the day doesn't have so much Kedusha, and we should wear. But we said before, for the Rambam, there's Meduik and Rambam, and the Kesef Mishnah in two places is Sois himself, but Legabe in Hilchus Zmanim, he says that the Rambam holds yes to wear, and in Hilchus Tefillin he says that the Rambam holds not to wear, so it's unclear what the Rambam Shitta is, but anyway, we have the Radvaz that says it's Toilah Asiyas Melacha, what we hold in Asiyas Berachah. If we hold the Asiyas Berachah, it's going to be Drabonon, you would wear, because we need something, we need an extra ois. If you hold the Berachah is the Reisa, we wouldn't wear. Just moving on, there's a din of, in Hilchus Mila, there's a din that we shouldn't take off tefillin before Mila. So it's seemingly a steer, because the reason why the oysters we have is Mila, is Shabbos, Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed possibly. But once we Shabbos, by Mila we say that we shouldn't take off tefillin before this Mila, because they're both oysters. So there's no reason to take them off. It comes to Chol HaMoed, it comes even to Shabbos Yom Tov, that when they're two oysters, we say, well, we have to keep them apart. So there's the Eliyahu Abba, which speaks this out, and he says that we need two Adam, not three Adam. I don't really understand. Whatever, we need two Adam for Oysters, we don't need three Adam. And the Rekeach brings down that Tefillin and Shabbos Yom Tov are Oysters of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And we need one Oysters of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Mila is a separate Oysters, but the Dinim are the Oysters of Shabbos Yom Tov and the Oysters of Tefillin are all Yetzias Mitzrayim. So we only need one of those. We'll see later maybe what's the problem with having two. I have Stam HaShayla, I'm not sure. I discussed that with a few people. Some of them are very noted to one side, some of them are very noted to the other side. A soifer who doesn't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. And someone comes to him and asks him for a pair of tefillin. So he goes to the soifer and he says, I need a pair of tefillin on Chol HaMoed. So he says, I'm sorry, we don't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Would the soifer be able to write for him tefillin on Chol HaMoed? Does it now become a tzoyach? It's hard to say that it would, because it's now become a tzoyach HaMoed, and you would be able to write. It's hard to say it's not. It's that the mice is also, the soifer holds that there's no tefillin on Chol HaMoed, there's no din tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Just one thing someone mentioned to me last night, he mentioned the Hoshe Hargav, I was discussing it, he mentioned Yisrach Moshe, that brings down the Gabbai, tefillin Rabbeinu Tam, says that a soifer who doesn't wear tefillin Rabbeinu Tam wouldn't be able to write tefillin Rabbeinu Tam, because we hold Kol Sheyeshnu B'Kshiyo, Yeshnu B'Ksiva, and since this soifer doesn't wear tefillin Rabbeinu Tam, he doesn't have a din tefillin Rabbeinu Tam, he wouldn't be able to write tefillin Rabbeinu Tam. So maybe you could say from there that in the same way this soifer today doesn't have a din to wear tefillin, so too he doesn't have a din to write tefillin. That's one side. Someone else about an hour later shouting at me that it's complete shlusin, and in the same way that the soifer has a stomachache, so poked at this second he wouldn't be able to wear tefillin. He's just allowed to write tefillin. So too on Chol HaMoed, poked today the soifer's not going to be wearing tefillin because he holds that he doesn't have a chiv, and he's a person who wears tefillin. He doesn't have a chiv to wear tefillin. I'm not sure where the shy is going. I don't know. I still want to discuss that with a few more people. We'll see. But I'm not sure. Sofer who doesn't write, who doesn't wear tefillin, if he'd be able to write for someone who does wear tefillin. Coming on to Mula Alokha, the Maisa, just to finish off, the problems of Leisus Goydidu. So when the Mishnah Berurah points out, the Ein Nochon Shabbos Agnes Achas Ktsotsim Yanichim Tefillin Ktsotsim Lo Yanichu. It's not good for the Nochon. It's Loshon for in one basic message that people writing, people not writing. Mishnah Leisus Goydidu. He doesn't wear it. And yet, machlokes whether we're mechuyif to wear tefillin in Atayr or not, there wouldn't be a problem of leisus goydidu. Leisus goydidu only applies when one bezdin would pass one thing, one bezdin would pass another thing, and depending on which bezdin, if you're with a tzibur which is doing like one bezdin, you mustn't do like the other bezdin. When it's the raisa, whether you mechuyif the raisa, yes, whether you mechuyif the raisa, no, there's no problem of leisus goydidu. And but the other achronim, stei chemed or chashulchan, amongst others, they all hold that there is a form of leisus goydidu, and you shouldn't wear tefillin in the base measure. Does I asked the of this base measure just before I spoke on to check that wasn't nothing political. He said that they do wear tefillin, and he doesn't mind if people come and don't wear tefillin. And he said that's zicha easier than other around. And the base measure which they don't wear tefillin, allowing people to daven with tefillin on, which Taka Moshe brings down. It gives Moshe. Moshe also brings down another nekuda. I saw there this it gives Moshe Chaim. Chelik, hey, Sunuch of Talad, that he speaks about wearing tefillin. He says, since it's such a clear, everyone knows it's a big machloikus, so he has to wear tefillin, not to wear tefillin. It's not like in Eretz Yisrael, people don't even chap, there's such a thing as wearing tefillin l'chol ha'moed. They don't realize, and obviously there's a problem there. But he says, he's talking about in America, where everyone knows the machlekas and the Ashkenazim and the Sfadim, the people from the Gulf, people from the Beis Yosef. So he says that it would be fine generally to wear tefillin. He brings another nekuda, which is actually sort of the minag in Hagus. The Rav doesn't want people to who are davening for Omut or davening or leining or part of the, any of the people of Gabon, we don't want them to be wearing tefillin. Which the Igor's way Shnakim brings down, he says, Poshut Sha'al Hashat, see Shnakim Shalyach Tefillin. The Shat Zichr should wear tefillin, he's a Shiach of the Tzibu, and the Shiach of the Tzibu shouldn't go what the general Tzibu is not doing. He then goes on to say that that's the Shat, which is a Shiach Tzibu, who it's in the base medrash where they appoint the Shiach Tzibu. And he's Mamash Shiach of the Tzibu, they ask someone to go and daven. But he says that if it's in the basement classes where any Tom Dick Harry can walk in and go to Omud, it's not a Loshen, but if anyone can walk in and go to Omud and Davin, he says that it wouldn't be such a problem. Yochol Yez Gam Shat, he would also be able to be the Shat, which I'm not sure what's the deal of Hargaz, for sure anyone can walk in or not, but that's a separate discussion. That's the Igus Moshe, who holds that it wouldn't be a problem. The Shevet HaFam, the Shevet HaLevi, and he's actually writing someone in London, who he says, "Belandim bevesim edusha kol akhila manich becholamoid." Everyone in that killer wears tefillin becholamoid. He wants to know what to do. So Yitaka says that after Yosef's going to do, he should wear tefillin. And he noted Yosef's kein loniach. He adds a one nakud, which is interesting. He says that here's that the samach, whose lashon is gedoyle olam, shoy mispalim bin ashkenazim. They wear tefillin becholamoid, but they do. Vehin atzman lo yonichu kalocha v'osa tachpul yishoynus. They do things that they shouldn't be putting on tefillin alocha. They do chatzitah, so they should be wearing tefillin. It should look like they're wearing tefillin, but not alocha. And he says that there's no makoy mekomokim en zedech bekibul lonim avaseinim. There's no makoy in alocha for this. And he's a sharp for showing us that shouldn't do that. He finishes off mish oisa meisa l'shem shemayim. If someone does ma'aser l'shem shemayim, he puts the tefillin on because the tzibba's doing that, or he doesn't, whichever way, and he does it home later, he kabbas choy min hashemayim ben yonech, ben shlo yonech. And he doesn't like the fact that people put on and make chatzitz for themselves, and he's not happy with that. So just to quickly, Chazor went to the Gemara, went to the Shoyin Machoinim, a few nekudas discussed out, ois is either an ois of, like the Tal says, an ois of achilas matzah, an ois of sukkah, or like Tosfos wants to learn, it's Oysa Melocha, where they do Melocha, and then Advaz, it's going to be Gavoy to Melocha, if it's the Oysa to Abonon, if we should wear, we shouldn't wear. We discussed the Shaila, which I still have to look into a bit more, like a Soif who doesn't wear, trying to write for someone who does wear, whether it becomes a Tzoyach HaMoid, not a Tzoyach HaMoid, and it might be Toil on a Rambam Rashbo about what's the problem with writing Tefillin. Because a Shtar, if you go up to a Soif and ask him for a Poshet Shtar, Shtar Choyf, he would be able to write it. But you go up to a Soif and ask him for Tefillin, he wouldn't be able to write it. So the Rambam learns because the tefillin is a problem with writing tefillin, it's because you're going to be too medactic on Chol HaMoed, Mamish do all the smaller kudas. And this Sofer who doesn't wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed, there's going to be a problem, he's going to be medactic because he's writing tefillin. The Rashba holds that the reason why you're able to write shtoris on Chol HaMoed is because it's a tzoyach. So it's not a tzoyach because he maybe doesn't hold the tzoyach, I don't know. That shayla still has to be looked into. Lois is going to do, the Mishnah Berurah Paskins, it is a problem with Lois is going to do. Plenty of Achoinim say it's not a problem with Lois is going to do because everyone knows about Lois, or there's no problem with Lois is going to do when it comes to Isis. Just to finish off, which in a way possibly should have been at the beginning, the reason why when I was asked to speak, I was happy to speak and go into the shtickle, something I wanted to do for a while. I wanted to look into the film Chol HaMoed for a while because 2 years ago on Purim, someone showed me a sefer he had. Someone Yeshiva showed me a sefer yad, and it asked a question there that it says that Mordechai went out on Vyotz Mordechai about Ter Zov, and the Medrash says that Ter Zov zut film. The Gemara in Megillah says that that's Mordechai Yotza is on Ter Zayin Nissan. So why is he wearing film on Ter Zayin Nissan? The field of shittas that you don't wear film. To in a way, this shaila mamash bothered me because I don't wear film on Chol HaMoed. And the answers there were very pretty, however, I wanted to find the proper answer to the kasha. Bashinoi, okay. I thought I'd do the shtickle, I'd look into it, maybe I'd be able to come up with an answer, which I wasn't able to. And late last night, someone emailed me, he heard I was doing this, he emailed me a Drush Chazon Sefer, Vash Hager, he sent me a Drush Chazon Sefer, which is a nice tikkun that I'm off with. He says that what's the reason we don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed? He said there's two reasons. He said either because tefillin is also ois, it's edus, but we've got shaykhs like Kodesh Baruch Hu, and when we have other edus, we have edus of Shabbos, edus of Yom Tov, Chol HaMoed, then we don't need this edus. Or he says that it's alts ava, it's alts love for Kodesh Baruch Hu wear tefillin. But when it comes to Shabbos Yom Tov, there's an automatic love. There's a kesher between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Automatically, we don't need this extra kesher between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, he has a nice shtickle that he says, before Mordechai, the reason they were learning Torah out of Venus, they didn't have a proper av of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They were doing everything more out of Chiyiv. And therefore, when they were putting Tefillin on, it was out of Eidus. Yeah, we got Shaykh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it would be a bizoyan to add on another Eidus. We have to keep on proving that were got Shaykh to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, they didn't wear Tefillin. He said then, in days of Mordechai, they were Kabbal Torah Ava. And it became the reason why they were wearing Tefillin is not out of Eidus, we've got to prove. We've got an Ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he says that now that they've got an Ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they're putting on Tefillin as Ava, then that's why Mordechai put the Tefillin on. Not because he needed it, because when it comes to Ava, you could do whatever. And he also adds in that he says, Loshen of the Ridashen, Lahyod the Moise Oyev Sibcha Vesosin Vikar. And the Gemara says, Vikar Zut Tefillin. So he says, Vikar, the beauty, we're showing the beauty when it comes to Ava Kodesh Baruch Hu, we can do so much more, we can keep on going. There's no limit. When it's Eidus, we're trying to prove something, it's a bit of we're pushing and saying, proving, we need so many Oysas. If we're doing out Ava, then you can do it however much you want. That's why Mordechai went and put on Tefillin Chol HaMoed. I think I've now found a just there to answer. Yeah.